Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ha! I take my shirt off. Work all day, hustle and pray. Got nowhere to go. Got to catch my sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar. Ah. Plantain,
ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Shirtless Plantain Show, your weekend review edition. This is your host, Dean. And as always, I am here with my co-host, my homie, my friend, Coach. What's going on, Coach? How's your weekend?
Hey, man. I don't know if I said this earlier, but fuck Jason Tindall, man.
It was a good weekend. It's a good weekend. Yeah. We support a very good team. It's nice. However, before we get into all of that, we have to cover the rest of Europe, as we always do. And this week, we start in La Liga, where the standout fixture for me happens to be Almeria 2, Atletico Madrid 2. This game was great because I don't know if you know this kid, Luca Romero. He's Argentinian. He's 19. He's on loan from AC Milan to Almeria.
I've definitely heard of him, yeah.
He is going to be a problem because he had Jan Oblak looking silly, not once, but twice, with two golazos in this game.
Yeah.
Almeria is basically the best non-winning slash unluckiest team in Spain. Mm-hmm. You watch them every week. They play really well. They hit the post. They hit the bar. They miss the chance. They don't get a result.
Yeah.
This week, 2-2 against Atleti is not a bad result.
Yeah.
Especially those two golazos. What's that?
No, I was just saying, especially after that midweek game, like there was some rotation in the team. You know, Depay starting, Correa starting, Witzel coming off the bench.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like there was. It was heavily rotated. So Savage started this game as well. Obviously he came on midweek as well. So this was all the hallmarks of a European hangover for sure.
For sure. Correa definitely, he opened the scoring, but those Romero goals basically sandwiched his goal.
Yeah.
And what's his name? RDP got his first goal of the season. He used to score a lot back in Italy. He doesn't score as much in Spain, but this goal was really good. Basically, he dribbled. No one wanted to mark him, so he was like, "Fine, I'll do it myself." You know, they kept marking his teammates.
So. I'll be honest with you. I feel like he's probably a much better international player than he is a club player. You know, there's loads of players out there that seem to find an extra gear or two or three for their national teams, and there's no doubt he's a top level player. But he really impresses me at club level. He's essentially the bodyguard for Argentina.
And
he relishes it.
he has a proper job description with Argentina. Yeah. He's clearly the biggest thug, and he's there to watch Messi.
Yeah.
For Atleti, he has other things to do as well, and you know, then he has those braids, so his brain is under a lot of pressure. So he can't be as good by default. You know, it's just what it is. You know, but nice 2-2 result for Almeria in that game. We move on to Barcelona, who hosted Getafe, and they basically abused that high line with some great passing in this game to win 4-0. Goals from Rafinha, Yao Felix, Frankie de Jong, and finally Fermín López. Are you catching up with this, Coach?
Yeah, so I actually want to speak about Frankie de Jong's comments after the game, because he was basically saying that, you know, he thinks this is not one of their best performances of the season. That people would obviously see all the goals kind of thing, where he's like, he wasn't too pleased kind of thing. I think that's actually really refreshing and really honest. I like when teams score lots of goals. My team scores a lot of goals as of late. But, you know, for example, you know, I'm not shitting on United because I've done that enough this weekend. But United fans would get the same result and think everything's rosy without, you know, just looking a tiny bit deeper. I'm thinking, oh, you know, we might have actually got away with one this weekend. So it's good to have that sort of level of self-awareness. And it's actually funny that someone like Frankie de Jong, with that level of self-awareness, doesn't play for United.
that's part of the reason why he can't play for United, because he's actually self-aware enough to know that he can't just do what Erik ten Hag does every weekend, gaslight the whole world as if we don't see his midfield opening Yansh every week. Win or loss, open Yansh. Win or loss, they treat other teams' midfields like Simica's treated Virgil van Dijk today. Oh, God, we'll get to that later.
That's a crazy, crazy pause.
Like, bro, we'll get there. But yeah, this was a fairly straightforward victory. Getafe didn't really offer much. They played a high line against a team that was happy to abuse it, and 4-0 was the final result there. Yeah. Your boys, Real Sociedad, their run of bad form has continued, and it finally results in a league loss because Villarreal went there and won 3-1. Two goals from Santi Comesaña, scored early in both halves, gave Villarreal a two-goal lead before Mikel Merino pulled one back during a goal-mouth scramble with 4 minutes left. It was looking like they were going to momentum their way into a draw.
Yeah.
But in the last minute of extra time, I think his first name is Alexander Sørloth, who plays with Odegaard and Haaland with Norway. Yeah. And formerly used to play for Sociedad. I think it was on loan there last season or two seasons ago. Scored, the nail in the coffin in this game, because it wasn't the winner. There were 2-1.
Yeah,
but yeah, the dagger, there we go. And that was a wrap. Like, what has happened to these guys, man? They still look good out there. They still created a lot of chances. They just cannot finish their chances to save themselves, coach.
Well, I think a lot of it is to do with the fact that I feel with players like Kubo tying down his future there, they're probably okay with just, you know, I think not coasting towards the end of the season, but just accepting, okay, we might have a weak finish to the season, but we're building for the future anyway. And I think that's probably translating down to the players. Like, every time I've watched Sociedad, there's always a, you know, an air of, do you know what, this team is probably better coached than the vast majority of teams in La Liga and quite a few teams in Europe as well, kind of thing. But there's that missing final star quality piece. And obviously they've lost players like, you know, obviously Odegaard, they've lost Isak as well, and they just quite haven't, you know, got that level of player in the team anymore, you know. That would see them over the line.
That's fair. They don't have anyone that's trying to leave the club. Zubimendi knows he's going. He doesn't have to try anymore, you know, but he's playing well. They're losing 3-1 Villarreal in that one. Real Madrid hosted Sevilla at the Bernabeu, and they had an early Lucas Vazquez goal disallowed in the first half. I'm guessing that's because the ref looked at Sergio Ramos's arm and saw the captain's armband. When he asked for that from Jesus Navas before the game, what do you think was going to happen, coach?
I'll be honest with you, I thought he was running up in there with like grenades and bazookas, man. I thought, you actually never know Sergio Ramos. Ramos is like the most comic book villain footballer of this generation. Like, you just don't know what you're going to get with him. A complete and utter like maverick and psychopath. So when I saw the quotes, and I think and then he was like, oh yeah, he really asked, I'm thinking, what are you even thinking to do with that? Like, are you going to commit seppuku in the middle of the burner bar? Like, what's happening here? You know, I was terrified for them personally.
Pretty much, but they didn't end up doing a lot in that game. Yeah. They had chances to definitely take the lead, good chances. I think Lucas Ocampos blasted one over. I forget the other guy's name, Romero, I think his last name is. Isaac Romero had another chance or two where he could have given them the lead.
Yeah.
But they basically just sat there and what looked like a deep block to me, and Real Madrid had trouble breaking them down.
They went there with a three at the back, so you really knew what was happening.
Yeah, yeah. Real Madrid did their best to break it down. You know, like Vinicius had some shots, Rodrigo had some moments, but they had to wait on magic from the bench, from Luka Modric.
Yeah.
The goal he scored in this game reminded me a lot of the one he scored for Croatia in the, I think, the semifinals of the 18 World.
He scored a similar one against United in the Champions League from a bit more infield, but to the same post and posting in as well. And it's essentially a Modric trademark. Like, that's his trademark long range shot to the far post, to as close to the post as possible as well, with as much like whip on it as you can physically get on there. And it really upsets me that this guy really wants to play beyond this season, because he's going to retire us at a level where he's still world class. Like, that's what's going to happen. He's going to keep playing. He's going to realize, well, I'm not getting any worse at this point, but I do need to spend time with my family.
I feel like that's a problem a lot of Real Madrid level players have.
Yeah.
I mean, like, when Zidane retired, he wasn't done yet.
No.
I mean, didn't he actually come back after his club retirement to play for France when Domenech begged him? That 2006 World Cup? I think that's what happened. He had already retired from club football.
Yeah.
And Domenech had to beg him, and I was like, fine. Then he gave us another world-class exit, you know, so... Yeah. Complete with the headbutt. But yeah, that was the goal that made the difference in this game. Real Madrid 1, Sevilla 0. Girona, I believe, play in on Monday. So they didn't play this weekend. So the stand is, before we leave Spain, Real Madrid are first on 65 points. Barcelona and our second. A full, that's a lot of points behind, coach. A full 8 points behind. This shit might be a wrap. Girona, one less game played, but they're on 56 points. Atletico Madrid on 52 points. And Athletic Bilbao on 49 points. And that does us for La Liga. Can we move on to Serie A, coach?
Of course, man. Let's go.
All right, let's go. We start with the champions elect, I suppose is what we can call them at this point, because it's looking real easy for Inter Milan right now. They went away to Lecce with a heavily rotated team, from Jan Sommer sitting down for Odero, Fratesi playing for Barella. They basically rotated a bunch, and they still managed to win 4-0. Two from Lautaro, one from Fratesi, assisted by Alexis. A very intelligent play. I had to make note of it. I know we don't like him here, but I had to make note of it because it was such an intelligent play that I had to respect it. And the final one from Stefan Dervai from a corner.
Yeah. I'm sorry to Arsenal fire this section here, but Arsenal really need to win like one of the big trophies this season, because what's going to happen is Alexis is going to fraud his way to a league title, and he's all these stands and be like, oh, you see, like, he's still winning big things. That's like, bro, this is like literally his first league title since 2014, and he wasn't even a major part of that either.
He's clear backup here, but he's doing his job.
It like frustrates me. I'm like, please, Bukayo, please, because I cannot, I wouldn't be able to cook, honestly.
But I have a different question for you. Simone Inzaghi is clearly one of the best coaches on the planet. How would he fit at Old Trafford?
See, I saw the conversation between you and Susanna earlier, and I was like, listen, man, like, better managers have gone to Old Trafford and failed. So
I don't know. Well, to be fair, to me, the only one that really, really qualified as officially better at that stage of their career was maybe Mourinho. And to me, at that point, he was already washed. I thought Mourinho was washed at Real Madrid. That last year at Real Madrid, I was like, he should never get a big job again. Then he went to United. But I would say at this stage of Inzaghi's career, he's probably the best coach that United would have hired at any point. Because Ten Hag wasn't moving me when they got him.
Ole is Ole.
Van Gaal was years past his peak.
Yeah, past his peak, but Van Gaal is one of the goats. OGs. Like, one of the goats in general anyway. But
yeah, in a lot of ways, real quick before you run past Van Gaal, I want to point out that a lot of the credit that Johan Cruyff gets for inspiring Pep's positional play and all that, I kind of feel as if that's supposed to be Van Gaal's love. Because Johan Cruyff, he actually indulged superstars. He actually liked a little more fluidity. He had Romario, he had Stoichkov. Van Gaal was one that was like, you run from X to Y, and if you do some other shit, I'm gonna send you back to fucking Brazil, motherfucker.
Yeah,
like, you know, and that's more Pep than Cruyff. But carry on. Sure.
No, I was gonna say, like, Simeone would go to United, and like Simeone and Zaghi, should I say, would go to United, and he'd be mortified at some of the cavalier approach to so many things, because he's clearly a stickler for like routine and discipline and. You know, he needs to know the sun's gonna rise at 6:03 every morning, or his day is completely effed. Like that's how and I just feel like United would be such a bad fit for him. Seriously, I'm not saying that he can't adapt, but I feel like if he's gonna be the coach for them, they're gonna need to give him like 3 years to fix everything and then start challenging. And I don't think you get 3 years at United to fix everything. You need to essentially fix everything in your first year and be ready to go by your second year. But yeah, it's such a mess.
Yeah, so, I think the thing United fans leave out in all their excitement about Mr. Jim Ratcliffe is that nigga is 74 years old, man.
Yeah.
He in a hurry, too. He trying to see these niggas win before he die.
Yeah.
So he not going to be waiting for no goddamn project. You better fix that shit now.
Yeah.
In any event, Inter 4, Lecce 0. They continue to lead Serie A. The team that's supposed to be competing with them for the title, supposed to, because they're really not, Juventus won 3-2 as they hosted Frosinone. Two Weston McKennie assists to Dusan Vlahovic. But at the end of the day, it took a late
Rugani
from Rugani, as coach says, to get the points for Juventus. Real strikers finishes from Vlahovic in this game. He's healthy. He's playing. He's scoring. Once upon a time, he used Arsenal to get his dream move. Would you still take him at your club?
No, not really. No, only because I want to honor Xhaka, because him and Xhaka couldn't share a dressing room for geopolitical reasons. And, you know, I'm backing my boy Xhaka all the way. But look, he's got, what, 75, 76 Serie A goals now? And what is he, 23? Like, that's an impressive record. And I think his right foot finish today was fantastic, man.
Yeah. I'll say this much about him. Of all the young strikers, you know, that are about to make that next move, because it's crazy to talk about Juve like they're not already the elite, but of all the strikers that might make a move in the next 2-3 summers, he's the one that most gives me that air of, I'm a 9 and I'm really good at it. Even if I'm not as prolific as you would think I am, he just has that aura of a proper 9. Like, I'm a box genius, because his goals this weekend were fantastic. And before we move on, a quick get well soon to Weston McKennie. He popped his shoulder out again.
I think, what's his name? Allegri was talking about the fact that it pops out randomly, and it just made me quiver. Like, it was just the thought of, you know, imagine you get home from work and then you want to slap on Warzone and then your shoulder just pops out. It's just like you're just there, your shoulder's dangling. Well, you can't play COD anymore.
You should self-abuse less and your shoulder will stay in place. But get well soon, Wes. Playing really well right now at the moment.
Yeah.
Milan. Hosted, what's that, bro?
He's less fat.
This is true. Milan hosted Atalanta in the Charles de Catalara derby. And in a just world, I would say Rafa Leao's first Serie A goal in 5 months. I can't believe that's a thing that's happening to a player that good. But did you see this goal, coach?
Of course. And his celebration, I always love when players like have the celebrations, like, yeah, shut up, all my critics, like, bro, you haven't scored in 5 months. I'd be a little bit more humble, but it's almost like Harry Maguire when he scored for England and he did like he cupped his ear or something, or he shushed someone or something like that. It's like the very next weekend he made a mistake that cost them the game.
Man, giving it large too early. But yeah, they took the lead in that game. Then Tim Koopmeiners stepped up to score a penalty that Giroud gave away. It's, as much as I don't fuck with Giroud, I don't wish him misfortune, but he essentially cost Milan the game today. But it was a soft call, but it was a penalty.
He's cost Arsenal many games before, so
he cost us a fucking league title with that big handsome asshole. But yeah, Milan won, Atalanta won. Bologna, these guys are not a regular on our podcast, because you know, initially was because I was scouting Joshua Zirkzee.
Yeah.
But now it's because Thiago Motta has these guys in fourth. They won 2-0 hosting Verona. Very comfortable win. Goals from Fabian and Freuler.
Yeah.
And now they're fourth after their fifth consecutive win. I'm looking at the form of the teams in the table right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm asking myself, or I guess I'm asking you now, coach, do you think these guys can make the Champions League this season? Bologna?
I think it'll be really cool because, you know, maybe it's the Britain coming up. I always love when I see British people abroad, especially in these leagues, being one of the main men for their teams, especially in a push like this. Like, Ferguson is Scottish, and maybe it's my John McGinn bias coming out here, I don't know. But for the most part, I think it's so impressive that someone like that can, because they don't, could you imagine like someone like a Ferguson getting a chance at the fourth best team in England? Do you know what I mean? And being one of the main men there? That's what's kind of impressing me, the fact that Thiago Motta can recognize his talent and he's getting more than a tune out of him. Like, that's really making me happy. I can't even lie. But to be honest, in terms of their sustainability, Thiago Motta's system and how he's got them playing, of course, like, they have to be one of their favourites for top four, because it's not just a flash in the pan. They're really taking teams apart on a weekly basis, even if they're not winning games. Like, he's coaching his ass off every single match day.
Yeah, and they actually happen to be winning games, because this is their fifth straight win, bro.
Yeah.
Five straight wins in any league is very impressive.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's before we get to the standings, let's talk about the defending champions, because they have our homie there. They went away to Cagliari, and they drew 1-1. Honestly, they were lucky that Zito Luvumbu was having a bad finishing day, because they should have been down probably by 4 or 5 in the first half alone. Osimhen finally played this week after his return from AFCON. Got the opener with a lovely header, then he got hurt again, which is why I do not want him at Arsenal. I do not think he's durable enough to last in the Premier League. That's just my own. He gets hurt too often. If he's not breaking his face, he's straining some muscle. It's always fucking something with him. Great player. Cagliari basically equalized with the last kick of the game from the same wasteful striker that cost him the first half. Luvumbu, basically the last kick of the game. And Napoli's shitty title defense continues. In any event, that is us done for Italy. Let's do the standings before we leave. Inter on 66 points, 9 points ahead of Juventus on 57. Milan are in third on 53 points. Bologna are in fourth on 48 points. And Atalanta are right behind them on 46. So there's a bit of a gap between Atalanta in fifth and Roma in sixth. That's a 5-point gap right now, 46 to 41.
I mean, Lazio are not too far behind as well. Lazio only a point behind Roma.
Yeah, so I think there's a bit of a gap forming between 5 and 6, 7, the rest of them, you know. So another week where the results don't quite go for, like, say, the Rome teams, Roma and Lazio, and all of a sudden that top 5 European spots is looking locked in.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see how it goes. Let's head over to the Bundesliga, coach.
That's good.
And a result that would delight you very, very deeply, coach. Leverkusen hosted Mainz and beat them 2-1. Scoring was opened by Granit Xhaka, our captain. I don't know if he scored another goal this season, but if this was the first
one. This is the first of the season. This is the first goal for Leverkusen, bro.
Wonderful goal. Even better celebration.
Yeah. I mean, so much so that he had Xabi Alonso worried out of his mind. And he had to tell the coach, he had to tell the medical staff that, yeah, just relax. He's being a fucking idiot. But, listen, Thunder Bastards are only what Granit Xhaka deals in. That's all he knows how to do. Like, just crack it in from 35 yards whenever he feels like it. But I think the most important thing here is the fact that there's just a very, very good chance that Mainz gets relegated. And I think that's an important thing for all of us to want for ourselves. seriously, I feel like, look, they're 2 points behind Cologne now. Look, it's going to be very, very, very difficult, I think, for them to essentially catch Bochum on 25 points. It's looking good, bro. It's looking good.
It's real peak for them. They did equalize that Xhaka Golazo, but Robert Andrich, Leverkusen's captain, got essentially a lucky winner in the 68th minute. But when you dominate the way Leverkusen dominates, it's not really lucky.
It's never luck, man. With that goal, though, it really creeps my mind. I was thinking, this must have happened so many times over the last 10 titles that Bayern Munich have won. And all I could think of in the moment was, it's not so nice, is it, now, when you're on the receiving end, Bayern, is it? It's not.
Yeah, 33 undefeated games now in the league for Leverkusen. In all competitions, really.
Yeah.
They've been undefeated, but 33 in the league. New Bundesliga record, which is now...
Since last season. Yes.
Pretty much. They have not lost a Bundesliga game. So they have not overtaken Bayern's record. I believe that was set during the COVID season, I think. Bayern's streak there. But speaking of Bayern, they hosted Leipzig in what was the big game this weekend. And a Harry Kane double got them back on track after 3 bad results in a row. Musiala set up the first one. Great finish from Kane. And the second was basically another last kick of the game type goal. Benjamin Sesko, if he could finish as well as Kane, RB Leipzig win this game.
Yeah, but he probably isn't at RB Leipzig, so he probably lose that game. but for real, like, there's a lot to love about some of these Bayern players and what they do. Like, Sané still looks to me like one of the best forwards in the world, pretty much. Like, you know, even though his output is a bit inconsistent, I'd say, but the actual level of his play to me hasn't really suffered at all. He's still a threat. Musiala, I've said on this pod God knows how long ago that he's the best player in the world in like literally receiving on a half turn. Like I remember specifically saying this maybe 2 or 3 months ago. I don't know if you remember as well, Dean.
I think we had a whole competition between him and Bellingham.
Yeah, basically. So there's a lot to love about them, but when you talk about mailing it in now, I genuinely think the only players there that are just haven't accepted that they're not going to win Bundesliga or Harry Kane and Eric Dier.
I found it interesting that Dier started in central defense alongside Matthias De Ligt, and they basically were playing a high line. So I was wondering if Thomas Tuchel was trying to find a new way to sabotage this week. But they played well for the most part. I think it was just a good game between two big Bundesliga teams. Bayern were probably worth the victory in the end. I'm not going to take that from them. But again, if Benjamin Šeško wasn't 20 years old and, you know, had the finishing of a giraffe, then they don't win this game. But not that it would matter because Thomas Tuchel is already fired. So, I mean, what else can we ask for, coach? I mean, we'd be asking for a lot if we wanted more right now. We move on to Dortmund, who hosted Hoffenheim, and they did a Dortmund, coach. They lost 2-3 at home.
They came from behind
to take a 2-1 lead by the 25th minute. But three inspired second half minutes from Maximilian Bayer got Hoffenheim all the points. What'd you make of this one, coach?
I think Jadon Sancho just needs to figure out what championship club he wants to go to next season. there's really, like, in front of Marco Reus's salad, like, really, you're going to turn up and just sour the vibe and just be... Basically, their coach after the game just basically said, "Look, this guy needs to be better," and it's boggling. It's mind boggling to me that there's people out there that are still going to defend. You know, forget the personal stuff, just his performances, and just say he needs this, he needs that. It's like, no, you need to be better. Like, you know, there's a level of respect I think you need to have for the game itself, and I feel like he's just coasting at this point. So yeah,
imagine saying this in Black History Month, but it's all true. That's crazy. Like it pained you to say it. I heard it in your voice. I saw it in your eyes. We were sad to say that, but the truth is the truth. Because he started pretty decent when he got to Dortmund, but his form has tailed off so bad at this point that even I can't defend him. But I don't defend light skinned niggas. So on we go. Here are the standings in Germany, my nigga. Leverkusen on 61 points, a full 8 points ahead of Bayern Munich on 53 in second.
You know what's so impressive about that? They only play 23 games, right? Liverpool are on 60 points, playing 26 games.
Yeah, but Liverpool are playing actual football teams, not fucking Greuther Fürth. No disrespect to Xabi Alonso, but come on, you know. But it's still impressive. I ain't going front. I mean, they're undefeated. You can't really argue with that. You know, that's hard to do in any league. Stuttgart are in third on 47 points. Dortmund are embarrassing themselves in fourth place on 41 points. Leipzig are on 40 points in fifth. And Eintracht Frankfurt make up the European places with 34 points. Hoffenheim are further 4 points behind them in seventh. But the most important part of the table, as coach mentioned earlier, is that Mainz are in 17th place with 15 points, only ahead of Darmstadt on 13 points. So we'll be watching to see how quickly they can get relegated. Let us move over to Ligue 1. We start at the Parc des Princes, where PSG hosted Reims, and an uninspired PSG. They didn't play particularly well. Mbappe wasn't very good. And it took a late Gonzalo Ramos penalty to tie this one up after Reims took the lead in the first half, thanks to an Amin Gouiri solo effort. Really nice goal. But the most fascinating thing about this game, because the actual football wasn't all that interesting, was after the game, when the journalists interviewed, Luis Enrique, and asked him why he took Mbappe off at the hour mark, to which he responded, "Sooner or later, the team has to learn how to play without Mbappe." What do you make of that, coach?
That's just, it's sad because, it's not sad, fuck him. But I'm hoping he hasn't agreed a deal with Bayern Munich, not Bayern Munich, so with Real Madrid, just for the chaos factor. But it's, you know, when a coach says that, basically, he's almost like a, I'll put it like this, coaches of clubs that don't lose their best players to another big club kind of thing don't really have that sort of resignation in the, in them. You know, they'll treat it as a, oh, well, you know, he's still our player kind of thing. The fact that it's just almost it's the worst kept secret in the world. I'm feeling for Luis Enrique a little bit because you're quite literally losing the best player in the world and you're basically telling them, look, you know, we have to accept our place in the food chain. That's what it sounds like. So, but it's honest. It's good. It's good and it's honest, but it's just, it's kind of sad.
Sad for who? Like, who are you sad for here? I don't understand. Like, Luis Enrique?
No,
you it's don't just, need your pity?
No, just, but you know when it's like, you don't never really want to see, like, especially during the season, you know, at least let's save all this for the summer transfer window and whatnot. But during the season, kind of, you want to at least put on the illusion that everybody's pulling together, because let's make no mistake, but Mbappe is still doing wonderful things this season, but he's mailed it in, like,
yeah.
So,
and this was one of the games where he mailed it in for sure. Yeah. Like, he was just out there doing rubbish. So yeah, he came off. Luis Enrique said what he said, and he wasn't wrong. Nobody's wrong, but I suppose yes. Now that you say it that way, coach, it is sad. Yeah. Again, a team is supposed to be a team, and having this level of disruption, you know what? They should just be happy that it's a wrap after this. He can just go and we can wait for the next big transfer, stupid rumor that goes on for 5 years straight or some shit. Because this shit was interminable. I'm just glad it's going to be over soon. Mets hosted Lyon, and goals from Lacazette and Banrama gave Lyon a 2-1 away win for their fourth win in a row. They're now up to 10th in the standings, coach. You were right all along. They were going to get it together. Do you think it was going to happen by February, though?
I was kind of hoping he got relegated just to see like how far down, you know, this rabbit hole we can really, really go. But no, to be fair, I'm glad for them. Not for Lacazette though, because he's a fourth star. But but for them in general, yeah, no, I am glad. What was I gonna say, sorry. Yeah, Benoit was scoring. I remember at one point, and I'm ashamed to say this, I did want him at Arsenal. I really did, but
When
is that Brentford? Literally, yeah,
he looked good. He looked good, yeah. And we're in the mud.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? I thought, like, you know, the left sided like playmaker. Yeah, you know, we can get something going. Whatever, blah blah blah. But yeah, he stunk it up for so long, and it just became a thing where it's like, if you're not getting in the team for Algeria, then you must be really, really fine. I don't think he didn't even go AFCON. Do you know what I mean? Yeah,
but not that he would have helped. Algeria was shit there too. So
yeah, that was terrible. But it's good. I'm happy for him. Like Maitland-Niles played left back this weekend as well, and it's just funny because he might. I don't recall him ever playing in midfield for Lyon. He essentially fucked up his Arsenal career to go play right and left back at a team that is not going to play in Europe next season. It's just.
He let Tomiyasu steal his job.
Yeah.
That was his job to have. You could have been the first defender off the bench, auxiliary midfielder, but you just had to, you know, be walking around Coney with your head down and shit, nigga. Oh, well, enjoy France. Enjoy the fucking baguettes. We move on. Lens hosted Monaco, and these guys played what I think your people call a humdinger. Because this one ended 2-3. And the only thing I saw on this was that Folarin Balogun goal. Pretty fucking great and chaotic, but I'll leave it to you, coach. Carry on.
You missed the put it like this. I need to go like watch a game in Lons, basically, because regardless of the time of the day, these guys set off flares for whatever reason. And I'm involved because you know me, I'm a hooligan, so I'm involved. So it was just lit. But you look, why he you know, despite his Wikipedia page again open the scoring. And then Balogun scored a type of goal that Adriano would be proud of. He just small boyed everybody. And then Bryce Samba scored an own goal. And then this is where it gets really interesting because Monaco had a chance to essentially make it 3-1 with a Balogun penalty that he missed. And he missed the follow-up, which was even more weaker than the original effort. Prior to that, though, Lens could have easily equalized. Easily. They had two or three really good chances, including one that came off the post after a deflection off one of their defenders. And then Saeed scores now. So it's 2-2. And I was like, yeah, this is absolutely, you know, course correction. Lens should probably go on to win this now. And then Minamino in true Liverpool, ex-Liverpool player fashion, or Liverpool player fashion in general, scores a late winner. And to me, to my mind, I feel like it's a completely undeserved win for Monaco. But I'm glad. No, I genuinely am glad. So yeah.
Well, I just want Adi Hütter to do the job they pay a manager to do. Yeah. And stop letting Folarin and Balogun take penalties. He's fucking terrible at them. He was terrible at youth level. He was terrible at Reims last season. He's terrible at Monaco this season. Just stop letting him do that. It's embarrassing for everybody. Marseille still running this whole new manager bounce gimmick because they're still using this old Cote d'Ivoire leftover manager. And they won 4-1 as they hosted Montpellier. Two goals from Aubameyang in this one.
Yeah.
Toulouse hosted your boys Lille. And your boys had the ball. They even took the lead. Then three unanswered goals from Toulouse. What happened?
I think at this point, there needs to be just an acceptance that this is exactly what Lille are going to be doing. They're just going to be a very talented team with a talented coach. Are just going to wow you 1 week and completely baffle you the next. And I'm okay with that. You know, I love them. I don't love them that much where I can be so invested that I'm going to be like, I'm going to try to figure out what's making them just, you know, be so inconsistent. But it is what it is. I'm at peace with it. I'm sure next week they're probably going to win like 4-0. You know what I mean? Amazing.
Yeah, you look at their last five results and it's a draw, a win, a loss, a loss.
I told you, man, that you just don't bother trying to understand them. Just enjoy what they do. So they absolutely still play some of the best football in the league, like hands down. But just enjoy them for what they are.
Fair enough. Let's do these standings right quick. PSG are obviously top on 54 points. Brest are still in second. So shout out them. I guess they're the surprise team of the season so far. And we didn't mention it this week, but whatever they're doing, it's working. Monaco are back in third on 41 points. Nice, who looked like they'd be second this season, are down to fourth on 40 points. And Lille are in fifth on 38 points. Coach is a new team. The team he wants to go visit, not actually Lille, Lens, are in sixth on 36 points. So that would do us for France. We move on to England. But this week, we start with the Carabao Cup final instead of the Premier League.
Mm-hmm.
Liverpool and Chelsea went to Wembley. And honestly, I know we tried to pretend that some results are in jeopardy because they have to play the games. The games are not won on paper. But when a club has lost their last six visits to Wembley, I think it's what's going to happen. Yeah. Liverpool won this one with a late Virgil van Dijk goal deep into extra time, because it was a 0-0 draw during the actual game. But so much happened in this game. It was a very entertaining game. It was a good final to wake up and watch over here in the States. But Coach, what interested you? What did you see? What made you happy? What made you shiver?
Chelsea, the beginning of Chelsea's, and I put in quotes, successful period started with at the time it was the Worthington Cup, right? The Worthington Cup win, right? And it was Liverpool, if I remember correctly. In fact, it definitely was. It was Liverpool, and it really pissed me off because I was like, oh, I know how this story goes now. Like, Mourinho was, you know, talking smoky and shit. Like, you know, he just felt it was untouchable. And it felt very, very just today. And the fact that Liverpool beat them in the last final, Liverpool in 2 years ago as well, beat them in a Carabao Cup final, and they beat them today again as well. But Liverpool beat them with, I want to say, one of the weakest sides they've probably put out this season by the end of extra time, basically. And Chelsea were still bringing on £35 million, £40 million players off the bench, £60 million players off the bench. And it was so symbolic of what the two clubs are about. That's what it was. It felt like there was some sort of course correction here where, you know, 2005 is finally now the way things should have went then. It's finally happening now, where Liverpool are going into a new era now. But they've got a bunch of great young players that are going to help, you know, usher in this new era. Chelsea have spent all this money and they're kind of stuck. We don't know who the coach is going to be next season. Most likely it'll still be Pochettino for FFP reasons, but we don't know who's going to be their best player. Like, we don't have any idea about what's happening with them. You know, whereas the reverse of that, of this fixture, you know, 18 years ago or whatever, it was very much about Chelsea have this player and that player and they're going to buy even more. And Liverpool are just kind of at a crossroads. Yeah, they won a Champions League that year, but they won a Champions League finishing fifth in the league this year. So whereas now there's so much clarity around the direction Liverpool are going to go in, you know, especially with what they've left over as well. Like, forget about the players that are out the door. Look at who's actually staying. The likes of Diaz, Nunez, Konate, Trent, McAllister, Jones. Like, there's a lot to work with there for the next coach. Chelsea, it's looking sticky. So yeah, I enjoyed the game. I think both teams could easily have been happy with winning. Like, they wouldn't have been happy. They wouldn't have been felt aggrieved. So I know Chelsea will probably feel aggrieved at the final, but I don't think they can be too mad that they lost. Same way if Liverpool lost, I don't feel like they could feel too aggrieved that they lost, because there was, like, I mean, they lived a charmed life. Both posts lived a charmed life.
So, yeah. I mean, you know, there are a lot of good performances. I thought Petrovic was good in Chelsea's goal. Kelleher was also good in Liverpool's goal. Gakpo probably should have scored. Sterling got a goal disallowed. Cole Palmer had some lovely passing moments in this game. Caicedo definitely murdered somebody, but got away with it. But what'd you make of that challenge? I personally didn't. I mean, if they gave him a red, I could have lived with it.
Yeah.
I also was fine with the fact that he didn't get booked. Because it wasn't even really a tackle. You know, he was running in a direction.
Mm-hmm.
Gravenberch hit the ball in a different direction, and their feet just landed in the wrong spot. Like, sometimes in this universe, two items cannot inhabit the same space. Yeah. Isn't that something from anime shows, bro? Or is that science? I'm not sure. But either way, Gravenberch's ankle no longer inhabits the space we currently live in. And I hope he gets well soon. But Caicedo kind of got away with one, but I see why the refs didn't make a big deal about it. Yeah. Enzo, I rate him, but I saw him running with the ball through midfield today, and good Lord. Like I said, pops my mind immediately. I was like, this is not an elite midfielder. I don't know what the standards are at Chelsea, but this is not tolerable at a proper club. I don't know. But a top coach
goes into Chelsea straight away and gets him on the insanity like workout regime straight away, because he's fat. Like, that's the end of it.
That's the short and long of it. Yeah. But the winner came from Virgil van Dijk. He scored a very similar goal, I believe, at the beginning of the second half, was it? But it got disallowed because Endo, in an offside position, blocked off Levi Cole, which I also thought was a good goal. I mean, a good refereeing moment. In fact, this whole final, despite any controversies people want to talk about after the game, I thought was very well refereed, which is not what you can say for most games in England. So shout out Chris Kavanaugh, at least for today. And they scored the exact same goal early in the game, got it disallowed, then Van Dijk scored it again, and that was the winner. Then the celebration that followed, bro, I hate to bring it up, but what the fuck was that?
Yeah, okay, so Tsimikas, brother, listen, look. Just be glad that Cameron and Mace don't watch football yet. They're at some point, it's inevitable they will with the World Cup coming, but just be glad that they don't watch football yet, because, bro, you would have ended up on his way is this week for sure.
For sure. Like, this nigga is lucky that Suella Braverman got trumped out of government, because he would be visiting Rwanda right now for that shit. That was wild, bro. Like, and also, it takes two to tangle, because why did Van Dijk let someone do him like that?
listen, I feel like we've actually spent too much time on this now. Like, it's enough.
But I guess this was the outcome that, I mean, there was no bad outcome for a neutral in this game. We can all just say, happy for Klopp. He got a trophy on his way out, so that's good. And Chelsea, lol. And here we go. Shall we talk about some league games, bro?
Let's go.
Let's do it. Let's start with Liverpool again. They hosted Luton Town in midweek and won 4-1. Luton Town took the lead in this game, but Liverpool just have all that firepower and they blew them away.
Yeah.
Chelsea's game hosting Tottenham got postponed. We don't know when that game's going to be played, but I suppose it was postponed because of the preparations for the Carabao Cup final, or I don't know, but either way, they didn't play this weekend. On to the actual games that happened. Crystal Palace started life with Oliver Glasner, their new coach. The 3-0 win. They hosted Burnley. They played well, but it took that red card that Burnley got from a denial of a goal scoring opportunity to really open the game up for them. What did you make of the new guy? What did you see?
Listen, man, he's dressed for the part. That's all I'll say. He's dressed for the part. He's got a goose on. He's got some TNs on. He definitely knows what sort of club he's managing. So
it's a very road manish.
So
I noticed.
He knows exactly what he's doing. So I actually love when people play into it as well. That's actually very cool.
I mean, like you got to respect your club's heritage, man. Like that Crystal Palace DNA is to dress like a road man. So yeah, fine. Why not? I don't know that you have the answer to this, coach, but Oliver Glasner is Austrian, not German. Do Germans treat Austrians the same way Americans treat Canadians? Do you know anything about this?
I couldn't tell you, honestly. See, I actually couldn't tell you.
See, that continent is so small and you're so close to everybody and you don't know shit about nobody. Fucking English bum.
Listen, the only Austrian I know, right, happens to be in the greatest actor film of all time. So, yeah, I don't know about any other Austrians. Do you know of any other famous Austrians that may or may not have
Stop right there. But I know Christoph Waltz, he's Austrian, I think. Then the rest we don't care about. On we go. Aston Villa, they continued their lovely season with a 4-2 win over Nottingham Forest.
Yeah.
What'd you make of this one, coach? Ollie Watkins still scoring.
Listen, man, I respect Ollie Watkins so much. Like I feel like if we're gonna talk about a player that's maximizing their ability, it's absolutely Ollie Watkins. Like he's doing everything. I feel like while he might not reach the levels of, you know, other top strikers, he's definitely sitting at the table. Like if he stays in the Premier League long enough, he should be able to crack 100 goals. And I pray he does, because I feel like he's someone that deserves it. Like you can see how hard he works and how much he works in his game. Like he knows where to, like he scores all types of goals as well. He knows where to be as well, but his link up play. Like the fact that he's got an understanding, regardless of who their wide players are, he's got a good understanding of all of them. Like I'm so happy for him, honestly. But Luiz's finishes this game out of this world. Like really, really good finishes this game as well. And Leon Bailey as well. Leon Bailey running at you, he's almost got that air of Luis Zaha around him. Like where he's almost that inevitable guy. His end product might not be all that, but he's skinning his man like more often than not. So
The only guy I remember stoning Leon Bailey in the last year was Gabriel. He tried to, and Gabriel's like, "Nah, I'm not having that shit. Fuck out of here." But he's been having a lovely time in England of late. 4-2 to Aston Villa in that one. Great goal from Morgan Gibbs-White in that one, because they actually went up. Aston Villa went up 3-0. Nottingham Forest pulled two back, and it was beginning to look like it was going to be a Premier League classic.
Yeah.
But then then Watkins assisted Bailey for the dagger, if you will.
Yeah.
Manchester United hosted Fulham, and I think for the first time since like, I don't know, like 1930 something or some shit, some crazy stat, like because Ten Hag keeps breaking records.
Yeah.
Fulham actually won the game, so the final score was
2003.
That's crazy, man. Like I wasn't even alive back then. That's wild.
why do I feel like, and I might be wrong, why do I feel like Stern John might have scored the win or scored against them? I'm gonna Google this right now.
Wasn't that nigga Dutch?
I don't know. And there's another guy, Colin something as well. Collins John as well, I think.
It's Mad Johns, man. It's Mad Johns. That's the most popular name on the planet, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, Manchester United essentially lost to Nigeria because the goals for Fulham came from first Calvin Bassey, who scored with his right foot, coach. I never seen no shit like that before.
Under bastard.
Like, I didn't think he could do anything with his right foot, but he did. The equalizer came late from Harry Maguire. And Alex Iwobi scored the winner after a great run from Adama Traore. I'm delaying here because I know you want to look this Collins John shit so bad.
It wasn't, but you know who did score?
I don't know, Clint Dempsey.
No.
Call him Kasim Richards.
Listen, Junichi Inamoto.
Holy fuck.
Yeah,
but in any event, if you want to hear more about this game, there's already a pod out. Coach basically lost his shit with Erik ten Hag, understandably so, because that bald nigga has been gaslighting us for so long, and I want my people to be free. So on we go to Brighton, hosting Everton, in what feels like the worst matchup for Roberto Di Zerbi in the Premier League. It feels like they struggle with Everton every time since Sean Dyche got there.
Yeah.
Everton actually opened the scoring in this one with a goal from a defender that's going to cost someone a lot of money someday. That Jarryan Braithwaite kid, man, he is fantastic. Like, the first time I saw him, I put him in my fantasy team immediately. I was like, this is a player, and I know they're not going to concede a lot of goals.
Mm-hmm.
Lewis Dunk, despite them going a man down in the 81st minute, got the equalizer with essentially the last play of the game. Great header in this one to tie it up, but... I'm going to be looking out for every Brighton Everton matchup for as long as those two managers are there, because it's just a fun clash of styles and it's fun to watch.
It's the classic, you know, I'm going to overthink shit, and well, I'm just going to, you know, not overthink shit. I'm just not overthink shit. I'm going to maximize what I've got. I'm not going to try to get guys playing in a way that, you know, probably doesn't fully suit their abilities, basically. So, you never get Sean Dyche trying to get James Tarkowski to, you know, come out of the wall from the back.
Yeah, well, I mean, to put it in Dyche, and you know, like, we keep the ball out of our end and we stick it in their end.
Yeah,
so, simple as that. Bournemouth hosted Manchester City, and the City machine clicked back in order as Phil Foden scored a 24th minute goal thanks to a rebounded effort from Erling Haaland.
Yeah.
Great movement by Foden on the goal for sure.
Yeah.
But the more interesting thing about this game was...
Bournemouth gave it to them, bro. Let's be honest.
That is the interesting thing about this game. I was kind of surprised at what I was seeing. Like, yeah. Bournemouth could have got something here, man. Yeah. Semenyo, Ouattara, Tavernier should have scored in this game. Yeah. Scholanke had a header that Ederson clawed off the line. I'm like... Maybe City aren't as indomitable as people have been saying they are a season. I mean, they got the result, so that's all that matters in the end. But they looked very, very... I mean, Pep was not happy.
Yeah, so City at some point are going to... They already are on the run already, by the way. Well, actually, they drew against Chelsea, but it is what it is. But anyway, they're probably going to go on a run at some point where they'll win more than, I don't know, three games on a trot, right? At least more than three games on a trot. But the way it's looking right now, it looks like it's going to be a lot of these types of performances where ultimately it will be their quality to see them over the line, not the fact that they are just playing better, but it's just the fact that they've got better players than everybody else, that they're able to just maintain a certain level. Whereas before, in years gone by, when they've gone on those stupendous runs, it's because, well, they've got better players than everybody else, but no, they're playing at a level that is befitting of their quality. Right now, I just feel as if they're, you know, against Chelsea... It's that second half, yeah, they looked more like City, but City that, you know, that we all fear, don't even let Chelsea get ahead in that game. So what
do you think the issue is? Because I was watching a match of the day after I watched this match, and they gave John Stones a lot of credit, you know, for, you know, playing that little inverted center back thing he's been doing for the past season plus or so. And he looked very good doing it, but City were open as fuck. Yeah. Like, I don't, it's not a City I recognize, put it that way. Like, it's one thing for them to maybe not be firing on all cylinders. Maybe they're not finishing their chances, like, against Chelsea. But to be so open defensively against, I mean, and Andoni Iraola has done a great job at Bournemouth. But I was sitting there with my mouth open, like, what the fuck is this? And how did they win this game, man? Like, they should not have gotten it.
Put it like this. Give Bournemouth, yeah. And let me think of a player that actually is more... that's befitting of the level, but also can do it. Let's say Bournemouth had, and maybe you can help with this, let's think of a player that's got really, really good final delivery that plays in and around that area of the league table. Like, let me actually think.
This is bad radio, my friend.
Yeah. But you get what I'm saying. Somebody with a better... Anybody in that midfield five with a better final ball,
yeah.
Boom, will score a goal yesterday. Absolutely.
Then Lewis Cook yeah. isn't good enough?
No. Okay. Harry Wilson. I know, and the funny thing, I know he was at Bournemouth at one point as well, if I remember correctly.
Who?
Harry Wilson. He plays for Fulham.
Okay, I know.
Yeah,
he played yesterday too.
Yeah, he did. He played really well.
Wait, wasn't he at Liverpool at one point?
He was at Liverpool as well. But if they had him again, they walk away with maybe not all the points, but they at least they leave one on City. You know, that's what it is sometimes in these types of games. You just need that one player that can actually deliver it to your Solanke, because Solanke will stick away the chance if you give him the good, if you give him good enough delivery. Like, there's always that chance. But yeah, City, why I don't think they got away with one, Bournemouth definitely gave them a good scare. Like, I know City fans watching that are thinking, "Wow, this shouldn't have been close," but it really, really was. So yeah.
1-0 to City in that one. Wolves hosted Sheffield United, and apparently Pablo Sarabia scored a golazo after you took him out of your fantasy team, coach. I didn't see it.
I just feel sick, man. This is good. Generally, for everybody across the board, this has been a horrible week, from my understanding, for fantasy, for a lot of people.
Oh, right? Not for me, buddy. I did great. I'm living good.
For a lot of people, I'm speaking, it's been a horrible week, and I think I could have really done with not taking out of my team. I really could have done with that. But yeah, he's just a good player, I think. Not quite the levels of, you know, Jota and whatnot, but he's very, very handy. And I'm glad that he's playing under someone like Gary O'Neill, who recognizes his talent. Like, I love Gary O'Neill as well, to be fair.
Yeah, I just want to let people know that I currently have 64 points this week in FPL. And that's with Douglas Luiz on the bench with 15 points. And because I forgot to remove Cole Palmer, who was playing in the Carabao Cup,
I think the system
will automatically give me my 15 points tomorrow. So, yeah, man, I'm killing y'all niggas, man. Y'all need to step it up, bums. Yeah. Especially you, coach, bum. The final game we'll talk about this weekend, because West Ham and Brentford play tomorrow. That would be Monday. Is Arsenal hosting Newcastle. We had a chance to talk with our friend Gabby and friend of the pod, Elliot, at length on the Arsenal pod, which has been out for over 24 hours at this point. So if you want to get any insight that's particularly tinged with glee, go listen to that. But coach, in the cold light of day, more insight from that game that you'd like to share, because you were cold at the stadium, so maybe you forgot a thing or two.
Yeah, Jason Tindall's a twat, bro, guys. Like, he's a fucking bastard, man. Like, seriously. Like, but outside of him being a twat, I think there's reason to be really optimistic with what Arsenal are doing. Because I know we're not going to score four, five, six goals every single week, basically. But sometimes you only score two, you know, to win the game. And it's a good foundation we're setting for ourselves, especially because we're not conceding high quality chances. We're just not. Nah. We're not conceding real high quality chances. There was an air of, and I really don't want to use them as an example, but sometimes playing City, right, you'd be very difficult to watch the game as an opposing fan, because there's that inevitability that they're just going to be so ruthless and so suffocating and so cruel, to be honest, to your team.
I'm gonna keep it a buck with you, coach. Like, remember I forget which game it was where Mustafi just kind of let Aguero run off his back. Remember that game?
Yes.
That was the last Arsenal City fixture I watched until Arteta came to the club. After that, I never watched another Arsenal City fixture again.
Yeah, what's funny about that particular fixture is that 3 days later, we had to play them in the league, right? And they scored two of the best goals I think I've seen them score in general under Pep at the Emirates. One of them was a KDB goal. The other one, I believe, was a Bernardo Silva goal. And that was the period where that was probably the biggest gap between us and City in that period, I think. I think we got a little bit worse than that after that. But at the time, anyway, it was the biggest gap between the clubs in terms of quality of the players on the field that both teams could field. And there was such an inevitability about it that I was so depressed just watching, because I knew there was no chance that we could even get a goal against them. And I feel like teams now look at us thinking, while we might not be as good at, you know, good as the, you know, financially doped that team, where we're building a reputation where it's like, you know, regardless of what the result is going to be, Arsenal are going to batter our goal today. They're going to really make us sweat today. And I feel like we're approaching that inevitable stage of our evolution where it's chances galore for Arsenal.
The first 22 minutes of this game were, I've watched those back, and it was a masterclass. I mean, it was the equivalent of watching Kurt Angle at his peak, just tapping people out with the ankle lock. Like, Newcastle could not get out. We barely saw David Raya. They had like maybe five passes in our half for the first 22. Half, not box, half.
So like, I saw Alexander Isak, right, just playing on the halfway line, hoping for something to drop for him, and it never came. It quite literally, enough, it just never came.
The fucking audacity of hope, my nigga.
Fuck
Oh, man. In any event, that was our last bit for this week, Coach. We're about to get out of here. Anything else for the people?
Yeah. Thank you. Just keep supporting, guys. Keep sharing, keep liking, keep subscribing. You know, leave comments any and everywhere on our Instagram, on our Twitter, just everywhere. Just interact, man. I'm like, you know, I don't bite. Dean doesn't bite anymore. He's had his shots. yeah, man. Just, you know, don't be strangers, man. That again,
do not be strangers. Gang. If you ever feel like coming on the pod, you're always welcome. Like, we're not joking about that. Like, literally, anyone can pop up. We, you know, we friendly enough.
Not you, Jay, though, because you're a twat.
And yes, last week we hinted at a surprise. That surprise is still coming. We just need time to get our shit together because we're all very busy people. Yeah. But any event, thanks for hanging out with us, Coach. Tell the people peace.
Peace.
Ha! I take my shirt off. Ha! Work all day, hustle and pray. Got nowhere to go. Got to catch my shirt. My plantain shoe. My plantain shoe. My plantain shoe. Ah. Plantain, plantain. Plantain, plantain.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.